There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John.
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name is Matt Messiano and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burdell to discuss the start of the Clevolution. Oh yes, those words written by Tom Burdell. Tom?
I see, putting the blame on me straight away. I can't believe no one said it, or if they have, I haven't seen it. Apologies, I've not ripped that off anyone. That is my own appalling wordplay.
It is. I like it though, I like it. It's exactly what we're about. Tom, actually, let's start with yourself because you actually went to this game. You don't go to a lot of away games in the season, but you generally pick one to go with every friend, and you've managed to pick an absolute banger because this was the first game under the new head coach, interim head coach.
I came away pleased, obviously, since we won, and I think you saw that was the bare minimum. We had to do that. We had to win, given the fixtures that we all know we've got coming out, all burned on the into our retinas, the fixtures on the horizon, how tough they're going to be. I think we saw some good stuff in terms of being a bit more pragmatic and bodies on the line and a real gritty, committed display to get 3 points. Low on quality from both sides in the circumstances. And generally, you know, if you'd have said that Val was actually in charge of that one, I'd have gone, oh yeah, I believe that. But I think it was about more than that. You know, you weren't ever expecting him to make wholesale changes after less than three training sessions, I'm going to assume. The most important thing was 3 points and, you know, and nothing else. So in that respect, I don't think you can be unhappy. And it probably alleviates, not all, but a bit of the pressure now in the remaining 8 games. Hopefully Cleverley will get all of those games to kind of get his message across. And it's a nice little audition for him now, hopefully. Hopefully. Let's hope we're not actually dragged into it and complacency of getting that win is limited to fans only.
Yeah, Jordan, Tom said after the game that he spoke to his staff privately and said that he wanted 3 points in that game more badly than he's ever wanted 3 points across his career, which was a real eye-opener. What did you think of the first game under Cleverley?
I have to admit, when you started that sentence, I thought you meant our Tom was talking to his staff afterwards.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah. That's right. Maybe he was.
Yes. We have a comprehensive staff here at the Watford Buzz podcast.
Yeah, and, that's right, yeah.
Not widely known. It was interesting. I think, you know, we as Tom said there, I don't think we expected too much in terms of a tactical change, the adjustments. There wasn't really a time for it. We didn't know exactly what to expect, but even so, wasn't really that time to instill anything like that. But we expected or hoped to see, I think, a bit of a change of the start to the game. You know, a little bit more intensity, a little bit more commitment in those early minutes. And I did think we saw that. It wasn't perfect throughout, but there was a little bit more application early on, and it was an improvement. You know, everyone's aware of how poorly we've started games this season, and to have some little bit of hope in those early minutes was good to see. But yeah, it was relatively I don't like to use the cliche so much, but it was kind of a back to basics approach, really, wasn't it? It was just doing the simple things well, nothing kind of overly exaggerated. But there were a few little interesting parts we'll talk about, I'm sure. But I don't think anyone can really complain with the 3 points. It's easy to forget almost how bad of a run we were on prior to that that victory. Is it 1-11 or something just before that? So, yeah, it is a big 3 points and potentially, as Tom said as well, a good audition for Tom Cleverley there.
Mm. Some big decisions for Tom in terms of the starting 11 ahead of that game. Daniel Backman back as captain, also back in goal or retaining his place in goal. Matty Pollock replacing the suspended Wesley Hoot, and James Morris coming in for the injured Jamal Lewis. Tom, what was your thoughts on some of those?
Yeah, I think we'd said on the pod post-COV that I fully expected Backman to retain his place. I think it would have created more of an issue dropping him again than anything else. Mm. In terms of him being captain, again, wasn't hugely surprised because it was a young team, wasn't it? And I think it was Opta put out a stat that it was our youngest starting 11 in about 11 or 12 years, I think I'm right in saying. Certainly a good while.
Yeah,
and, you know, you look at the rest of that team, there's only a couple of players that you'd say kind of fall into the experience category. And I'm not even sure you'd want to give it to either of them in the circumstances. So didn't have any issue with that. Morris coming in at left back. Jamal Lewis was injured, kind of wasn't known seemingly that he was injured. So that one caught me by surprise a little bit. And the other one that caught me by surprise was obviously Pollock in for Sierra-Alta. I thought he might go with Sierra-Alta just to have that bit of experience next to Porteous. But I've got to say, all three of them, for my money, and I know this is, you know, divided opion, I thought they all, and we'll get into them in a bit more detail, but I thought they all did well on the whole. Certainly no one let us down.
Mm, yeah. Jordan, what did you think of his first starting 11?
Yeah, I thought the point Tom mentioned there is interesting. You know, that was the youngest, you know, the youngest team in general, but that back line was incredibly young as well, wasn't it? That was, I think, Ryan Porteous is the oldest at 24 there. A lot different to what we've seen. You know, especially the back line has always been the area we've kind of leaned on experience-wise. You know, a lot of veterans there over the last 10 or so years. So yeah. It was a different look. And, you know, obviously a big part of that was Wesley Hoot's suspension. But still, I thought actually, I thought the back line was probably the most promising part of the performance. I thought the two centre-backs were really, really good. I think that was Matty Pollock's best game for us so far. And you know, for Ryan Porteous, it was potentially up there as well. Not that he was outstanding, had a ton to do, but I thought he was much more like the positive Porteous we've seen over the recent, well, not so recent, I guess, but over the time he's been here. So that was really promising. And then, you know, apart from that, there were a few decisions that were kind of out of his hands, weren't there? But I thought the midfield was interesting. I thought it was, you know, an athletic, combative midfield. I think Tom Delibashiri is actually operating quite well in that number six position. A little bit more flexibility to have some interchange. And I think if you've got Livermore in there, he's not really going to rotate out of that spot too often. But with Tom Delibashiri, obviously you have that option that he can step into that more forward position. And even if it's temporary, you can have one of the others sit in there and drop in. I was also a little bit surprised of how much we kind of really focused on the left-hand side through our play. I think the right is generally what you're thinking would be the most likely, with Andrews being a bit more of an established fullback than Morris. But the left was really kind of where we were making things happen. And Espria was quite narrow on the right. So there was a few little adjustments there. But lineup-wise, I thought it wasn't a bad look going into this pretty important game.
How different was it from something that Val would have done had he been posed with the same problems? Do you think it would have been an almost identical team? Or?
Yeah, I think maybe. You could see it. I think potentially the centre-back decision might have been a little bit different, perhaps. But, you know, in terms of what we tried to do on the pitch, it was a tough game for us to really show too much. But, you know, as I said, the left-hand side is a little bit more dominant, and I thought that would maybe sit change and shift. But yeah, it was somewhat different, I suppose, but it's kind of hard to say. You know, I think the difference in performance and application from the players, it's hard to know if they'd have given the same for Ismail. But yeah, I did think it was, I did also think it was interesting how our left side dealt on the opposite, you know, off the ball. They had quite a lot to deal with in that left-hand side. Laird coming down the right was a real problem for us early on, and Morris was maybe a bit of a question mark there. But he actually did okay himself. So I'm not sure how much Val would have done differently, but I think you might have seen a little bit of a difference in terms of that, that application and desire from the team on and off the ball.
Mm. Tactically, Jordan, was there any major differences, and did we learn anything about Cleverley's tactical preferences?
I don't think we learned too much. As I said, the left-hand side, you might learn something a little bit there. There weren't particularly any, nothing crazy that stood out. You know, off the ball work was better. Intensity in general was a little bit better. You know, being first to, or at least being able to compete in the midfield duels, getting into the kind of higher end of the pitch and working things a little bit more. You know, the right-hand side, we saw Espria being a little bit more narrow, which I think is part of his natural game anyway. I kind of got the impression that he wasn't too restrictive on what the players were to do in their particular positions. You know, obviously there's some structure in there. You know, you've got Tunde Dibashiru sitting in that number six role. You've got two eights as well still. That didn't really change too much. But, you know, he kind of adopted some of the parts that are working well from Ismail, I'd say. It's hard to know if that's just his preference anyway and just happened to fit, or if he just thought, you know, we can see this season, obviously, Kayembe and Kone have been effective in that position. They're already playing well there, even through the bad parts of the season. They've generally been good. There's no need to change that too much. But someone like Espria, he seemed to be playing to his game. Shaq Fatadze is the same. You know, I think he was doing kind of what you expect him to do instinctually. So I imagine there's an element of, these are the things we have to do, you know, defensively. These are what we expect in terms of kind of our foundation, how we're going to play, where we press, when we press, what we do with the ball in general. But then you also give that freedom to the players to kind of play how they naturally do. And I think we saw that in forward positions from the front three in particular, even Emmanuel Dennis. You know, that sort of, he didn't have a great game. He was quite poor for large parts. But, you know, that goal comes from really what Dennis does. He's harrying, harassing, and capitalizes with obviously a good finish. But yeah, it's an interesting one to see. And I'm quite looking forward to what changes and what differences we see against Leeds, having had that extra bit of time.
Tom, how much of that win comes down to manager bounce, and how much comes down to Birmingham being in a poor place at the moment?
Yeah, good question. I think a lot of it comes down to Birmingham not being great. And this, I guess, is the difference between being at a game and not. Because at the time, in the first half, it felt like I spent the entire game in front of me that they were attacking our end. And in the second half, it felt like I was spent the entire half looking at the far end where they were attacking our end. But actually, when I watched the highlights back in preparation for the pod, the long highlights, which were kind of 10 minutes and jotted down all the chances, I didn't really feel like they had that many great chances. Now, there were decent chances. And obviously, Batman made a good save from Miyoshi. But actually, watching it back, it's quite close to him, even if it was a pretty firm strike. They missed a couple of decent opportunities. Miyoshi got in behind Morris late on. There was one where Sunjic kind of got out of a couple of challenges, then somehow sort of stuffed it wide. But, you know, there were no chances where I thought, oh my God, that has to go in. And actually, I think although we perhaps had less of the game and a lower XG slightly overall, I felt like the few chances we did have were pretty decent opportunities. So, yeah, I think it was a game between two poor sides, and we probably, you know, nicked it. And overall, Birmingham probably couldn't have had too many complaints, because I don't think they did enough to win it. And I suspect there was an element of new manager bounce, trying to impress Cleverley and so on and so forth. But I reckon those things are probably overstated sometimes. It's more about getting the previous guy out if he's particularly unpopular, which I've not to say that Ismail is, but I suspect, you know, there are plenty of instances of, look at Man United all those years ago. Mourinho had become so toxic that they could have put a can of Coke in charge and he'd have got a run of results, and they duly did. They put Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in charge and he won a load of games, didn't he? So before being found out.
Mm. Do you think, Tom, that Cleverley is managing for his opportunity for next season, or do you think it's already been decided by the top brass that, you know, this is a until the end of the season type job?
I'd love to think that he has a genuine opportunity for next season, and I'm quite prepared to be wrong on this. They've done surprising things in the past, but I reckon they are, if they haven't already got the person in mind, then I reckon they would be minded to appoint someone external with a bit more experience. I think it's still early for him, but look, if he does well out the next eight games and we see, you know, what he's about, his philosophy, kind of patterns of play, improvement in certain individuals and get a few results, you know, I wouldn't base it purely on results at this stage. Then I don't think many people would have a huge issue with him getting a crack at it next season, as long as there's some kind of mechanism to keep him within the club and make sure that he's looked after properly. Because, you know, I think we owe it to him after all his service to not just dispense with him if it was to go wrong. And if it were to go wrong anyway, you know, there should be some kind of role within the club for him if he wants it.
Safe now, do you think, after those 3 points, Tom?
I think so. It'll be interesting to see obviously what happens at Birmingham City, given they have now got Gary Rower in for the rest of the season because of Tony Mowbray's health, and wish him well. But I think, you know, the one that I'd be worried about is Sheffield Wednesday. They appear to be kind of upwardly mobile, don't they? And a few above the dotted line, Stoke, Plymouth, are kind of faltering at the moment. So I think we're all right, purely because there are so many teams we'd have to fall past to get sucked into it. But I don't want to get carried away.
Mm. Only difficult games left now, though, Jordan. Like, Birmingham was the last really winnable one. Everything else is going to be a bit of a sterner test.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in some ways, you know, I think I'm not opposed to it. I think you look at that Birmingham performance there. Birmingham had, in many ways, the better the chances. They were posing more threat throughout. We had a good, you know, 15-20 minute spell towards the end where we looked a bit better and we kind of managed to capitalise in that last couple of minutes of that half and so on. But I think, you know, in general, I still think, at least in the immediate future, we're going to struggle with some of the elements we struggled with under Ismail too. You know, it's not all tactical. There is a personnel element to it as well and so on. But one area that I do think we can be strong, that we have an inherent strength in, is, you know, playing that kind of more compact counter-attacking, not necessarily compact, I should say, but more composed and ready to break. You know, we don't have to be so offensively minded throughout the whole game. We don't have to control the ball as much. I think now we're in a position where we can be a little bit more defensive. Teams are going to play against us now in a way where they're going to see us as a team that's struggling, and they're going to be a little bit more potentially less cautious when playing against us. That does leave us in a position where we can, you know, break against these teams and pose some threat. We saw it in the, when we initially changed that approach under Val, when we kind of had that difficult run in before Christmas with some tough fixtures, and we saw Livermore come in and we became that counter-attacking team. I don't think it's a coincidence that form changed when we kind of, that fixture list reversed, and then suddenly we were playing against some of these lower table teams where we had to again dominate and so on. So I think it might favour us in some ways. You know, I think this game, like a game like Birmingham, it's not like we were convincing. You know, we beat a poor team. We were also relatively poor, and Birmingham could have won on a different day as well. So I'm curious to see if we actually find ourselves a little bit more suited. It makes Tom Cleverley's job a little bit easier potentially to, obviously your expectations are shifted slightly, but also the mentality of the squad. You can kind of have that underdog feeling that you almost need to have to really emphasise the reality of the situation. I think if you had another game against, you know, the Birminghams, the Rotherhams and so on, going into these last few fixtures, that's where I could see a little bit of complacency coming in. But it's much harder to be complacent when you're playing the sorts of teams we're going to be playing over the next few games, especially when you really look at what our realistic target is now, and that is essentially finishing as high a mid-table team as we can.
Mm.
But you have to be mindful of that real threat that is kind of looming below you and at any point could suck you down.
Yeah, but with those 3 points at Birmingham, the pressure and stress is maybe a little bit backed off, which might help Watford going forward against those teams that, you know, on paper are, you know, better placed to beat us.
Yeah, I mean, it does help somewhat potentially. Yeah, no, I think we most likely are safe. You know, I think there are definitely teams that, I think we'll pick up a few points between now and the end of the season. I don't expect that gap to close too much. You know, obviously not just because I think we'll pick up some points, but also I'm not sure there'll be the ones below us that can gather enough to really build that ground up on us. But you know, I want to see at least a couple of weeks though of how they play. I'm curious to see how they would play under a bit of heat too. You know, I'd like to see how this Watford team responds to a bit of pressure. And I think Tom, you know, I actually can't remember if I answered this question already, but I think Tom Cleverley is somewhat playing for the chance to potentially have, you know, an extension, maybe be in the position next season to go on. I'm not sure the owner would be against it if he ends this season well. And you know, if you're Tom Cleverley, once you get a taste of this, you don't really want to give it up. So I'm sure he'll be looking to try and impress, and whether it's for a job here or to further his career elsewhere as well.
Let's go a bit deeper into the game then and discuss a few notable performances. Tom, should we start with your favourite player, Daniel Backman?
Yeah, I saw I think it was Sam Uko who of WD18 who posted after the game and that he thought he'd been really good. And a lot of people immediately kind of came back and said, no, he was terrible, he was awful, he was da-da-da. Oh, bloody hell, I must have been. And it is hard when you're watching at the ground. You don't necessarily get the best view. I was sort of fairly, it's probably only about 15 rows back behind the goal. So I didn't have the best view in the world for half a game at a time, I suppose. And obviously everything's very emotive and happens kind of, you know, sent as an assault on the senses with all the noise and everything. It all kind of happens very quickly. So it's not an easy way to kind of, an away game certainly, to kind of analyse player performances. But I kind of thought he threatened to do something kind of bad or worrying a few times where he got the ball and he invited pressure. But I never felt like the almighty cock-up that people expect from him came. The saves he made, I thought there were a couple of good ones, but nothing that was kind of truly outstanding. Quick reaction times, I suppose, to the Miyoshi one, even though it's close to him, you know, it's pretty ferocious shot from probably about 12 or 15 yards. So, and he struck, he caught it cleanly. So I suppose you've got to, you know, it's the reaction through a crowd of bodies to save that one. The feedback I got when I kind of tweeted out my thoughts on him was that, you know, his failure to find people kicking the ball long was a problem and invited pressure, which I think is a totally fair observation. I guess I would counter that by saying everybody collectively has kittens when he tries to play out from the back in the way that Hamer is expected to, and the way he certainly did at the start of the season. So the pragmatic payoff for that is if you don't trust him to do that, then he has to go long. And realistically, in that front line, if your front three on the day were Asprilla, Dennis and Chakvetadze, and I did bemoan this on Twitter at the time, why the hell are we pumping it up to Emmanuel Dennis, who in my mind must be about 5'8", you know, never intentionally won a header in his life. Asprilla, who doesn't bother jumping for headers, he just tries to muscle the defender out the position, you know, and Chakvetadze is fairly small as well. There's only so much we can do in that regard. But no, I thought he had a good game. And good for him to get a clean sheet and a win as captain after those first two games where there was a clear individual error in both of them against Swansea and Coventry.
Yeah. Jordan, was that Ryan Porteous's best performance of the season, do you think, or close to that?
I think it was definitely the good version of Porteous. You know, I think we got to see, obviously, the managerial change, the head coach change. We saw that tactical, that unique tactical approach of, you know, asking Porteous to drive into midfield and be aggressive to win that ball back. That was gone in this game. We saw the more conservative version of Porteous, which I think, you know, even the conservative version of him, you're still going to get those moments of aggression. I don't mean necessarily kind of, you know, physical aggression. I mean just being proactive to come and take the ball, being close to his striker and so on. We still got to see some of that, but more contained and more patient, I'd say. Maybe that's partly because he had a young back, you know, he was a senior player in that back line, really, wasn't he? So there was maybe an extra element of responsibility there. But I think he supported Matthew Pollock really well. I think they made quite a good combination, actually. So it was his best game in some ways, I'd say. And I think there was one in particular. I'm trying to think of the game now. We went down to 10 men at home. And he was really good in that game. Sorry, I'm struggling to forget who we were playing now. But
I know the game you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, but this one was good. No, I was pleased to see this. So it was encouraging because I've obviously been critical of Ryan at times, and this was a good one. And again, as I said earlier too, same for Matthew Pollock. I think this was definitely his best game at least.
Yeah. Jordan was saying there, Tom, that he was impressed with Pollock as well. Do you reckon he's now ahead of Serralta in the centre-back pecking order, at least under Cleverley this is? And do you envisage him continuing to be a useful piece at this level?
Yeah, I think at the moment he is on form because he's had a couple of little goes in the team in 2024 and I don't think he's really let anyone down in that period. You know, we obviously all saw him against Southampton in the cup and he did well and he had a couple of games after that. He's come back in now. I don't expect him to retain his place when Hoot is fit again, and rightly so, because Hoot has probably been up there for player of the season this year and has generally been excellent as now captain as well. But I thought he was really good. And the only reason I want to put Sir Alta in ahead of him was kind of A, experience, as I said a couple of minutes ago, but also, although he's tall, he feels slightly less clunky and kind of tin man than Pollock, who, you know, I can hardly criticise people for being less mobile than they might want to be. I'm definitely not mobile, but do you know what I mean? Him and Porteous both feel like quite big, bulky guys. And I don't know, I didn't necessarily think that was the best pairing. Not that Sir Alta is super mobile anyway, as we know. But no, I thought he did really well. He certainly kind of, like, in terms of numbers as well, I pulled some numbers down for him. Fourth for successful defensive action, third for interceptions, first for aerial duels won, and third for ball recoveries, and that's out of both kind of teams. So, you know, obviously it's a kind of indication of being under pressure, at least in terms of balls into our box and into our final third and having to deal with them. But, you know, he did deal with what was thrown at him, which I think was good. Is he a useful piece at this level? I think he still can be. He can be, yeah. You know, it's easy, especially in this kind of social media rolling news 24 hours a day age, to make an instantaneous judgment on a player and never waver from that. Players can get better, players can get worse. It's just the way it goes. And I think, you know, he's had to kind of work from back from a position of disadvantage, being that Millwall game last season at the Den. But based on this season, I don't think anyone could say he's let us down. And he definitely has the ability to be one of the four for me, not playing every week, but a useful rotational piece.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Absolutely. And a word as well on James Morris. He certainly has his flaws, but I think you, like myself, Tom, can see that every time he gets on the pitch, there's very slight progress that we're seeing. And, you know, I think he's a better player now than he was at the start of the season, and certainly at the end of last season. So, I mean, there's every chance he could carry on and be a pretty useful player next season for us.
I think so. People are quick to get on his back because he's quite small, and he seemed, and, you know, this is my perception of the situation anyway. He's quite small. He's not the quickest. He's not the strongest. He looks like quite a polite, mild-mannered, meek, perhaps, young man. And actually, I think it's always overlooked that he's never played any senior football until he came here. I think this is right. He's never had a loan spell in the National League or National League South or anything that. He was a scholar at Southampton. He got released. He came to Watford. You know, he played a bit of under-23s football, and we've kind of gradually introduced him more out of necessity than anything. I'm quite prepared to say that, and I'm quite prepared to admit there are shortcomings. I think he had a good game at Birmingham, probably one of the better games I've seen him have. Not that I've seen that many of his kind of 90 minutes or I think however long he was. No, he played the 90, didn't he? But there are a couple of lapses in there, definitely. That Miyoshi chance I mentioned sort of towards the end was where he was caught square on and he got in behind and so, I can't remember who it was, slipped the ball in behind him. And, you know, there are a couple of occasions where that happened. But again, you know, from a purely numerical display, backing up the eye test, he won more defensive duels than anyone. He was third for successful defensive action, second for crosses completed, first for passes received, which I think is quite interesting because it kind of tallies with what you said, Jordan, about directing a lot of play down that left-hand side. There's still room for improvement, but I think given he is still young in age, still young in experience terms, homegrown, air quotes, in that he's British at least, so that counts towards the quota, I think he's a useful one to have around. He'll probably be second choice to whoever comes in next season, but I don't have a kind of feeling of dread when he comes in, you know, to the team. And I think in our current state, we just simply can't afford players of equal calibre as the starter and as the backup in every position. You just can't. We just can't.
Is he the not quite as brittle version of Jeremy Ngakia?
In what sense? In
like, it wouldn't be a first choice, but he's handy to come in and it does a job.
Yeah, I think Ngakia kind of comes with more experience and a little bit more know-how and what have you, perhaps. But yeah, I can sort of see what you're saying. I think he's still kind of slightly behind in that development curve, perhaps. But he would be my clear second choice, I guess, is the point. Like Ngakia would be Andrews. But he just needs minutes. And if he's not going to play, then I would say get him out on loan. But I think he will still get opportunities here.
Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I think Morris is most likely going to be that guy, that safe, and I say safe investment is an easy investment to make. You've got something there, it's ready made. Is he the best at the standard? No. He could improve, definitely. But even if he stays at the level he is, he's not expected to play every minute. You know, I think we'll still be looking to address that left back position this summer. Obviously, Lewis is going to return. I think the club would ideally be looking for a starting left back in that position. Morris probably knows that, and you know, maybe he's okay with that. He's just signed a new contract, so I'm sure there's some understanding of what his role is most likely going to be. But, you know, that's the decision on right back is a little bit different. And Ngakia, I think, is maybe a little bit closer to the starting position than Morris is at left back currently. You know, Andrews is obviously, I think, most people's favourite to start in that position. But Ngakia, you know, I haven't been the biggest fan of Ngakia, but there are coaches that have liked him and have used him. So it wouldn't surprise me if people, the club, view him a little bit higher up the pecking order there. So I think the left backs will be the one that's going to be interesting, though, because that one we definitely do have to address in the summer. You know, when this window opens, we're going to have one left back on the books. You know, Ken Stemmer can deputise there as well, I'm sure. But really, if you're building a squad, that's an area you've got to start with pretty quick, because you don't really have the depth. It's not just a quality upgrade; it's the fact you only have one. So yeah, I think his role will be as backup for a little while at least.
Mm. There is an option to sign Jamal Lewis, but are you saying that it's unlikely that we would want to take that up?
I'm not sure what the details of the option are, but I think it's probably unlikely, to be honest with you. I don't think we've had the performance level or availability from him. He's missed quite a few games to suggest that we would most likely take a deal, which is probably at the time more reasonable, but having had this spell, I think is probably the value of his value has probably gone down a little in this time because of those issues. No, he's had some decent moments, obviously played in a kind of a tough time. We've had some little bit of turbulence again, but having the injuries, having the mixed performance, we're maybe looking at that prearranged fee, whatever that would be, as maybe less valuable than it was at the time we made it. So I would be a little bit surprised if we make that deal permanent, unless it's extremely favourable to Watford. So,
okay.
I'd be pretty surprised as well, because Newcastle obviously are up against PSR limits. you know, this is a player that they played a not insignificant amount of money for when they got him. I think it was about, for them at the time, about 12 million. You know, they're going to want to, and they're going to need to recoup as much as possible on that front to kind of put into their spend. According to FB Ref, he's on 38 grand a week. Never know how accurate those figures are, but I would have thought that would, you know, if we were expected to pay most, if not all of that, then that's probably towards, you know, the higher end of our current pay structure for a player that just hasn't fully vindicated that. We've seen good and we've seen bad, but that we've seen more mediocrity, I think, than anything.
Mm. Okay. Georgie Chakvatadze, he was not expected to be available for this game. It took a few of us by surprise, certainly myself. How important can he be for the rest of the season? And what did you think of him on Saturday?
I think he's extremely important. I think, you know, he's one that offers a different sort of quality, but you know, something we see from Asprilla too. He's got that extra touch, that capacity to carry the ball forwards, cut in at good angles and make things happen. I still think he's finding his feet a little bit. I'm hoping next season's gonna be the real opportunity for him to take on a bit of a bigger role. But every time he plays, especially in the recent weeks, it feels like he's become more and more important. So, you know, the game on Saturday, he had an impact, definitely, but I still expect more from him. You see in flashes of what he can do, and like, you know, I think he is building that confidence. Obviously, he's going to be away, obviously, over the next week for international duty, but I'm looking forward to seeing what he can offer towards the end of the season, and maybe even see him in some different positions too. We've obviously seen him from the left, but I'm wondering if we get a chance to see him in a more central spot at times as well.
Tom, you saw him in the flesh. What did you make of him?
Yeah, I thought he was good again. And as you say, a real surprise that he played, because Cleverley had said, oh, you know, better than we expected, but no suggestion that he was going to be available for the weekend, which I think in itself probably underlines his importance to us. I just pulled up his stats for the season. So Y Scout categorised him as an attacking midfielder. I think he's probably played central midfielder more often than not, in my mind. So per 90 minutes versus all other championship central midfielders this season, he's first for progressive runs, second for dribbles completed, first for attacking duels won. And I think that kind of gives you an idea of his importance to us, because it feels like we've had a paucity of central midfielders who can carry the ball and can break the lines for us for quite a while now. And suddenly we've probably got two, in that you've got him and Ismail Kone, who's pretty handy at that side of things as well. So yeah, I really like him. I think he always moves the ball well, gets out of tight spaces, quite press resistant. It's looking more and more shrewd getting him tied down in January by the week, I think.
Okay, Emmanuel Dennis, who has been, I don't know, a bit of an odd one since his come in. His signing was heralded as being an amazing thing. We saw that the video that the club put out, it was the only real signing that we were going to make in January. Hasn't really hit the ground running.
What, Emmanuel Dennis? I thought he was awful, mate. I thought he was terrible. Let's deal with the good then. It's a goal that no one else scores, right? Out of our forwards, certainly. The finish is really good. I think the finish, it goes underrated almost what a good finish it is, in that he kind of sets himself and lifts it over John Ruddy, you know, central position, etc. Got to think very quickly. It's a good finish. He had, and to underline that, his XG on the game was 0.52. His post-shot XG, which is the value that you add or detract from the effort from the shot, from taking the shot, in terms of where you place it in the goal, that lifted it to 1.09. So it lifted his XG on the day to 1.09. So it kind of, you know, with good finishing, essentially, he basically doubled the quality of the chances he had. And I think a lot of it would have gone on that attempt alone. He had more touches in the box than anyone on the pitch, 7 more shots than anyone on the pitch, 4. But I thought he was just largely absent again. And I said earlier about, you know, not kind of relishing the physical and the aerial battles, and that we know isn't his strong suit, but he just sort of drifts in and out of games when it's not stuff that interests him. He completed all of his passes, but he only completed 8 passes, only completed 1 of 4 dribbles, 1 progressive run. I just felt like he was a bit of a, you know, we're carrying him for long periods. And I think that quite a few people around me were getting frustrated with him as well. The talent, you know, is undeniable, but it's the kind of application. And we've seen that in the goals that he scored. You know, the Huddersfield goal was a really well created, manufactured the opportunity for himself really well. The Leicester goal is obviously scored in a similar way, I suppose, to the Birmingham goal. But between that, you know, making the wrong decision, losing the possession cheaply, losing possession in dangerous areas, not doing the hard yards, etc. I think he's kind of been exactly what we feared in totality. You know, an enigma, a talented one moment, a bit of a peripheral figure the next. I may be being too harsh.
Jordan, is he being too harsh?
No, I think that is fair. I thought he was pretty poor too. And, you know, a couple more numbers there as well. You know, turned over the ball 7 times, 5 ground duels, 1-0. Just wasn't really... He wasn't effective when in possession, was he? You know, he had 2 shots. Obviously, one was blocked, one was the goal. I think the goal was the best example of what he can do. But it is in flashes, it is in moments. And sometimes those moments don't line up, do they? So it's difficult. He hasn't been good. I'd say, honestly, probably his best performance for us so far was when he came off the bench against Cardiff at home. And he played from that right-hand side and just kind of... He gave some life to the game, but a mixture of the what we were feeding him wasn't great. You know, you mentioned it at the beginning of the episode here, Tom, but lots of balls up in the air towards him, just kind of hopeful stuff that he's trying to get involved in, not really having much opportunity to. He only touched the ball 21 times. I know he came off a little bit earlier, but still, there's not a great deal of involvement in possession. I just think if you took that goal out of his game, we'd be giving Rajovic a lot of criticism for that performance. So, yeah. But he scored and he won us the game, so that's also what he offers. That's something you have to consider too, right? So it's almost similar to the... It's similar to the Rajovic argument in some ways, isn't it? I think Dennis offers you more. You know, again, that goal wouldn't have come about with Rajovic because of that ability to press and that tenacity, the mobility that he has. He does offer you a bit more when it happens, but there are games where you look at it after the game, you kind of, whether you look at the numbers, you look at the footage as well, you combine the two and oftentimes you are left a little bit disappointed. But he won the game. So cheers, Dennis.
Who starts against Leeds?
In the striker position,
yeah,
probably Dennis. Although Bayo was okay when he came on, you know,
he
a little bit off the kind of things were going a little bit too. He was maybe moving a little bit faster. His mind was moving a little bit faster than his body at times, but he got more involved though. You know, he does offer you something different. I just do have a soft spot for Bayo, but you know, he had as many touches in his time on the pitch. He had more touches than Dennis had in the entirety of his performance. And when Bayo came on, he got 22. You know, involved a little bit more in general. He did better in the air, you know, winning more of his duels, turned the ball over less, you know, offside less, had a couple of shots as well. But just, you know, there's actually one opportunity Bayo had when he came on. We kind of, it was hard to tell if it was a cross or a shot across goal. I think it was most likely a shot. He did quite well to get it away. He just kind of dragged across John Riley's goal and didn't test him. But, you know, he was making things happen. He had an energy about him, which I do quite like to see. And I think he's just a more natural alternative to Dennis. You know, Rajovic obviously wasn't fancied in this one, but I think based on what Tom Cleverley's principles are and what he wants to see, I think the pecking order is most likely, especially for a starting position. He needs that work rate, he needs that mobility in the forward areas to almost off the ball more than anything. And that kind of leads me to think it's going to be one of the two between Bayo and Dennis. But with the goal, you're probably looking at Dennis, right?
Tom Cleverley's got a bit of time now to work with the remaining players after this international break. Do you expect to see anything different from him with regards to formation or trying to implement the way that he wants the guys to play? Or is it still too little time to really make many changes from what the side has been doing this season?
I don't think there'll be much change. I don't think at this point there's going to be wholesale change, right? We've talked about the limitations of the squad ad nauseum this season, so I think there's only so much you can do even if he is given the rest of the season. But I would like to see a bit more of a, personally, you know, if he only achieved kind of one thing in that sense, I would like to see a bit more of an identity when we attack in terms of how we, you know, patterns of play, how do we build up. Because I think that's something that's been, and Jordan's talked about this quite a few times, so piggybacking his thoughts, but I do agree, you know, it's been quite an off-the-cuff element to it. So if we could, if that's something we can build upon, then great, because there are players in those areas that I think will be here next season. You know, I would have thought the likes of, well, that whole midfield, Kayembe, Delibashiru Actually, that might be a lie. Kayembe, Delibashiru, and maybe Kone are going to be here next season. Chatfatadze will probably be here next season. Asprilla might not. When I started this point, I was thinking more of these players would be still here. But, you know, there's players there that will still be here next season, hopefully. So, yeah, I would like to, if nothing else, kind of see that. If we can do that between now and the end of the season, if we can show kind of strides in that area, then I think you would, and get some results along the way, then I think you would kind of judge that success over the remaining 8 weeks.
Jordan?
I think the same really. I think seeing a little bit more refinement, a little bit more. I mean, rather than saying the specific in terms of what I think we'll see, I think it's more a case of I want to see something. I want to see something we can talk about in terms of just a particular lean towards a specific, you know, style or identity in terms of attack. I think we need to, you know, whether it's wing play, whether it's, you know, trying to build up centrally, let's find some avenue to try and work towards. It wouldn't surprise me. I think most likely we're going to see something from the wings a little bit more. You know, see how we can incorporate that kind of driving from those wide positions, support from the fullbacks. There was good support from the left back, especially in this game. So I think that might be what we tend or will tend to lean towards rather than that build up in the middle. You know, you look at the midfield, you've got that ranginess in Kayembe and Kone that can carry the ball forwards, but a lot of the time we're seeing them slip the ball into those wide positions, and that's where we're building play from. So I think capitalising that. But, you know, I would at the same time like to see us. We had one thing that I did like from Ismail was when we had the 2-8s really taking shots. You know, I think we saw it Swansea away was a good example of that, but not Swansea away, sorry. Preston away was a good example of that. We were allowing him to be a little bit more proactive around the edge of the box, get shots away and try and hit the target, be a little bit more aggressive in that capacity. If you can combine that with some wing play, then I think, you know, we might start to build something a little bit more promising, because the forwards they can be difficult for us in terms of building through them. So that's what I'd hope to see. Whether or not we'll see it or not, I'm not entirely sure. But I think we'll hopefully see something a little bit more structured than what we've seen so far.
He was obviously the manager of the under-18s, and he said that he wants to see some youth making their way through the team. He had Albert Ames on the bench for that game against Birmingham. Do you think you'll see anything more from the youth as we go through the rest of the season?
I don't think we'll see much, to be honest with you. I think he'll rely on the kind of senior players he has if we have some injuries and so on. I think potentially, but in terms of youth, I think you're probably looking at more the younger players that are already established in that first team squad, like, you know, Matty Pollock, for example, even Morris, you know, the young players we have at our disposal already, Asprilla and so on, rather than bringing those players from the youth team up. It's a big, big jump. And he knows a lot of the guys in that first team already, you know, probably better than the under-18s in a lot of ways. So I think he'll most likely stick with, for the most part, what he has.
So Jack Greaves will remain on the sidelines, you think?
Yeah, I just think it's a big, you know, they might see some benefit in him training with the first team and having that exposure to that level of coaching that he was having before, and hopefully having now with Cleverly and being around that quality of first team player. But, you know, he's not been used so far, and he's only a young player, but I think it's most likely he's not quite ready to be playing these minutes that we need from the likes of the Kayembes, the Kones and so on. I think it's probably just a little bit too far. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Tom Cleverley sees something there and gives him a go. But it's probably not what I expect at this point.
Okay, fair enough. We've got a few questions. All right, this first one comes from ChrisHowe_WFC. What do you think are the tactics to score goals? Other than shots from outside the box, there doesn't really seem like a clear plan or identity.
What are our tactics to score goals, you say?
I presume so, yeah. I presume so.
Okay, so in regards to Cleverley, I think we're still figuring it out. You know, we talked about earlier on giving them a bit of license to do what they kind of naturally are kind of inclined to do. As I said, Chatfatadze, Asprilla occupying different positions. Chatfatadze a little deeper, Asprilla trying to get a little bit narrower, a little further up the pitch. I think we're still trying to figure that out. We've got a variety in forwards. I think right now this game against Birmingham has been relying on the quality of those forward players to produce something and essentially see what we can do. And, you know, Tom mentioned there being more off the cuff, improvised. I think that's where we're at currently. And as we discussed in terms of what we want to see from Tom over the break, it's finding that way to be a little bit more structured, have a little bit more of a kind of idea in mind to capitalize on those moments we do get opportunities to break and those chances in these games coming, they're not going to be as consistent. Or when they do happen, when they do occur, we've got to be clinical. We have to be precise. So you need to have a little bit of structure in your build up there to really make the most of those opportunities. So that's kind of one where it's hard to say. We have to kind of wait and see a little bit, I think.
Okay, cool. From @Watford_Douglas, do you think Tom Delibashiru is the answer to our central defensive midfield issues? Livermore was a solid addition, but felt like he was never supposed to be the first and only option in that position. TDB seems like a natural fit in his honest opinion, and the coaching staff must be relieved they've stumbled across that as an option.
Yeah, I think it's been a kind of unexpected, kind of happy coincidence almost a little bit. Tom Delibashiru, they would never have envisaged him playing that kind of holding role. I think a lot of his ability is in his physicality, or a lot of his attraction, I guess, actually, is in his kind of physicality, his ability to get forward and get into the box and kind of energy and what have you. I like him a lot, and I think he's becoming, you know, thankfully, touch wood, injury free, he's becoming a really useful, kind of serviceable player for us. A lot of people were very glowing of his, you know, in reflection of his performance against Birmingham. And I must admit, it was one where I was like, oh, I must have kind of overlooked how good he was, because it kind of passed me by. But I think over the few games that we've seen him there, he's very composed. He's good. He's good on the ball, and I think that's half the battle in that position. I think you can learn the kind of the game awareness and the situational awareness of where you need to be and positioning your body and that sort of thing. But he's already got the kind of in possession side of it locked down. And put it this way, I'd certainly rather see him there than at right back. So yeah, I'm quite happy to run with it, and also putting him there enables us to play Kayembe further forward, which we've obviously learned this season is where he is considerably stronger.
Yeah, just a quick one for me as well. I think I like it as well. I think it's good. It's a little bit of a shame we didn't get to see it under Isma, really. It was an option that just wasn't really looked at or used, I guess. But he gives you something different there. There's a little bit more mobility. You know, maybe defensively is not going to be the combative type defensive player that Livermore is. He does have defensive quality, though. He's still able to occupy space and, you know, obviously, you know, cut out some passing options, but still be a physical presence in there too. I like what he does for you in possession, though. He's quicker, you know, laterally. He's going to offer himself to fullbacks a little bit quicker than Livermore. He kind of occupies. If you think about Livermore playing that six, much of it is in that central spot, even when he's kind of looking to pick up the ball, where Tom Delibashiru is happy to drift even onto the touch lines to do the same thing and give you a little bit more variety in possession. Also, I like the rotational aspect we can have. We mentioned it a little bit earlier on, but yeah, in short-term situations, in certain phases of play, it's beneficial to have that number six being an option to push forwards and create overloads and so on, allow different passing options to open. He can do that for you. And in that short term, you can have Kone or Kayembe just drop into that spot and rotate for that instance, and it gives you something different. Where Livermore was very rooted to that spot, I think Delibashiru is a little bit more versatile there. So I quite like it. I think it's a good move, and I'm quite looking forward to seeing how this one plays out.
Okay. Final question, this one from Tom Hagen at Robert Tex. Of the managers TC has played under, who would you like him to emulate and why?
Sir Alex Ferguson would be a good start, wouldn't it? Usher in an unparalleled period of success at Watford. Oops, kicked the bin over. No, in all seriousness, I guess he kind of means it more from a Watford lens. And I'll go back to a manager from kind of yesteryear, and that's Malky Mackay, who I think I'm right in saying was the first manager he played under at Watford. And I'll be very quick to nip this in the bud. Let's separate Malky the person from Malky the coach. And the reason I say Malky Mackay is because I think it's probably a similar job for Tom or whoever the next manager is, quite frankly, in that you're going to have to get more out of the resources than you perhaps should and ordinarily would, and really kind of box smart in terms of recruitment, as much as that may not be the current incumbent's responsibility in the same way that it was Malky Mackay's. and use a kind of get the very best and squeeze the maximum from a kind of group of youngsters and journeymen. And you know, if that's the kind of basis of the job, and the kind of football follows a similar style, which I always thought Malcolm Mackay's teams tried to be entertaining, tried to play football the right way, but weren't, you know, adverse to being pragmatic either. You know, certainly in my kind of mind's eye, I feel like we really utilised some of the kind of flair players we had at the time. People like Will Buckley, Henry Lansbury, Cleverly, who was obviously a very different player when we brought him in. Don Cowie obviously had a bit of a transition from kind of centre mid to winger under him and became very effective. So, yeah, I think if you could kind of follow in those footsteps, then you wouldn't go too far wrong, because he certainly had us punching above our weight for a bit.
Mm. Jordan?
Roy Hodgson for me.
Yeah.
No, I think... very good. Marco Silva, I think, actually. I'd like to see some elements of that time come through. You know, I think I'm curious to see how, not just at Watford, but if, you know, wherever he goes next, I'm curious to see kind of what he draws from, because he has... You know, I'm not one that's upset. Like a lot of, I don't know, the former player becoming a manager sort of thing and kind of jumping the queue because of their playing career can be a little bit frustrating and oftentimes doesn't work out too well. But I'm curious to see with Tom. You know, I think he's a switched on smart guy and he seems a humble guy as well. So I'm curious to see kind of what he's taken in and what we see come through. I think you'll see a lot of elements to, you know, what he brought through as a player as well come into his managerial style. But yeah, I would like to see some elements from Marco Silva taken, not just in terms of what we see on the pitch and so on, but you know, a lot of what you hear about how he conducted himself. Well, and also a lot of negative in that regards to the way he left, but the way that he manages, the way that he deals with his players, and the way that he approaches games, I think would be an interesting string to add to Tom Cleverley's bow.
Okay, cool. I'd say David Moyes, because I don't want to pick the obvious in Sir Alex. I feel like David Moyes was kind of a Sir Alex, but at Everton. You know, he was there for a very long time, wasn't he? And he had a similar kind of relationship with the club staff, with the players, with everyone. And he had kind of built a kind of family there. And I guess that's why he got the job at Man United, because they wanted that. And I felt like they could have possibly had that if they'd given him more time. No one ever talks about the fact that when Sir Alex got the job at Man United, the team finished mid-table for maybe a couple of seasons, was it, I think, until they finally found their feet. But you don't get time these days. And so David Moyes was ushered out the door. But I think that he's since proven that he is a good manager at West Ham and the like. And I think that Tom could do well by taking on a few pointers from Mr. Moyes. Silence.
I didn't know if we were going on to the next point or not.
No, I was expecting you guys to come back and criticize me for that one, but
I think the Moyes Ayer and Roy Hodgson and Malky Mackay, what a trio of managers to come up in this discussion.
Yeah, just a mix of all of those three, please. okay then, so a little break and then we move on to Leeds. We've already mentioned it's going to be a tough one, but maybe we'll see, I don't know, a more invigorated side under Cleverley for this, a bit more time to work with them, and it's going to be a tough game, but it's Friday night, it's under the lights, it's anything can happen really.
Yeah, exactly. I think the pressure's on Leeds, really, isn't it? Because we've kind of done our bit probably now, you know, and obviously don't want this mentality to infiltrate the squad, but we've probably kind of done what we need to do for the season. It's kind of over to them suddenly, isn't it? With Leicester faltering and then being in FA Cup action. They've, 12 wins and a draw in their last 13 or something like that, Leeds. We do have quite a history of significant games against them, either wins for us or us losing or whatever. So yeah, let's hope it's another one and you really get the Cleverley reign up and running in front of our own fans.
All right, well, we'll be back after that game to discuss how Tom Cleverley has done in the second of his managerial appearances. And who knows, maybe a surprise result, we'll see. From myself, Matt, from Tom and from Jordan, we've been the Watford Buzz. You can find us on the socials at Watford Pod, at TB Bedell, at Messi Messiano, at Jordan Weimer. And yeah, have a very good week. Enjoy the week off of Watford. If you have the opportunity to get down to a non-league game, I would very much recommend it. I know
non-league day on Saturday.
Is it non-league day indeed? Well, there you go. All the more reason to get down. I will be at Barnet as Barnet face Dorking Wanderers, a very interesting side. If you don't know about Dorking Wanderers, look them up. The same manager as chairman. And they've gone all the way from park football through to the National League in, what is it, 12 or so seasons or something like that? It's something
not very many, yeah.
Something crazy. So a really interesting side. I'll be looking forward to watching that one. But I think games for Hemel and Snobbins and other games around that you can go and pop by. And I always recommend that people do that when they have the opportunity to do so. Right. Okay, then, guys. I hope you've enjoyed this one. See you next time. Bye-bye.
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 Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.